You want a prediction?
Yes.
Pochettino will be in charge of Manchester United within 2 weeks.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, Patriots. Happy Wednesday. Your differential show with a twist, where we're not preparing for any game weeks, but we are wrapping up the season, James. Wrapping up.
Yes. Hola. ¿Cómo estás, everyone? It's Wednesday morning. We're going to do this a bit differently because we haven't got any teams to pick this week or anything like that. I'm sure we'll do Eurofantasy. Are you going to play Eurofantasy, Serge?
Yeah,
good,
I'll play.
Good lad, yeah.
Look, I'm not going to play with any seriousness, James.
Well, it's just no different to fucking FPL or Sky, is it?
If the wheels come off, the wheels come off. But I am going to play. Yeah, I'm definitely going to set up a team and get started. I don't even know the rules and stuff, but...
Don't worry, I'll be there to look after you in circa 14 days or so. This one's going to be different, so we're more just going to wrap up the season and where we finished in our various teams and shout out to mini winners and prize winners and that kind of gig.
Cashola!
And then we're going to have a little brief chat about England and Chelsea at the end because yesterday was eventful, to say the least. Right, we will start with the dead team, Serge. We scored 56 points at the weekend. Some nice returns for Foden, Odegaard, Eze. Was that enough for us to win the Zombie League?
No.
High score was Vex Virus, 65. We got 56, Serge.
We were third, weren't we, going into the week?
Yeah, Vex Virus had, despite only having 8 players, returns from Foden, Odegaard, Eze, Isak. Lowest zombie score of the final game week. There were two on 15. Giannis Lappas and old mate Riley both scored 15 between them, which was essentially Mo Salah's assist. So, Ronan McGinley went into the final day, Serge, with, I believe, a 12-point lead over us. We scored 56. He scored 48. So we finished 4 points short of first.
But he's got
to share the joy because Martin Paul went into the last game week 3 points behind him and scored 51.
Whoa.
They are joint winners of the Zombie League this year, Ronan McGinley and Martin Paul.
We done well though to come third. I'm well impressed.
That's great. That means we got the kind of the principal ideas right last summer and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll just read their two teams out just for interest. So Ronan's was Pickford, Vardiol, Saliba, Trent, Salah, Odegaard, Fernandez, Foden, Watkins, João Pedro, Saka. He had Amdouni come off the bench. He also had Turner, Pau Torres, Colwell on the bench. Martin's team was Onana, Vardiol, Saliba, Ben Chilwell, Eze, Fernandez, Foden, Richarlison, Solanke, Haaland, Watkins. Like that front three is one that you want. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking at our team, dead team, over the course of the season. I think there's only three players that I look at and I think, meh, could have possibly done better. Maybe four. Goalkeepers, I think, is a bit of a lottery anyway at the best of times.
Martin also had Saka, who's also subbed out for someone. Leno, Pau Torres, Kabore. So if you look at Martin's team, and he's very much picked like a 12, really. Mm. Ronan's is a bit more of a perhaps slightly stronger 11. But the trick is with this is, you're going to get injuries, aren't you? I mean, we finished the season, no help, Serge, by having 10 on the final day, right? Because down to two defenders.
So, well, I look at it and I think Estupinan was a flop for us. And who knew Brighton would flop? Well, I say flop, you know, they didn't live up to last season. Bruno Fernandes, I didn't see Manchester United having such a big drop off. And yet he still was in and amongst the top point scorers, right? 166, not disastrous. And probably João Pedro. It's probably Brighton and Manchester United that let us down a little bit here. But then they underperformed over the season. But you look at the rest of the team, the likes of Guardiola, Foden, Haaland, Eze, even Odegaard, Watkins, Saliba, solid picks.
Yeah, that's the way to go with this, mate. Right, differentials had a decent final day.
Oh, by the way, sorry, on the zombies,
yeah,
44 points behind me in the end.
Oh, okay. What a relief.
44 points. Save. Save.
What I should have said is Ronan and Martin's final ranks, by the way, 1.625 million. We were 1.673 million, Suge. So if you'd finished 1.5 of a zombie team this year, you'd have won it. I think most went down overall this week, I think, which is exactly what should happen at this stage of the season, really. Differentials, scored 66 final days, Suge. Havertz captain for 12, but Eze and Mateta obviously starring, 38 points between them. Is also a six-pointer for Brennan Johnson. That meant we finished 39th overall in the differential league, Suge, which is pretty disappointing because in last year we were very much pushing to win it. Highest score of the week was Frederick van Dijkum's 95 points. Returns for Robertson, Doughty, Havertz, Rodri, Maddison, Captain Eze and Mateta. Lowest score with a transfer, Guy Collins, 35 points. Returns for 18 points for the treble Tottenham with Romero, Maddison and Brennan Johnson. And Kai Havertz, 6. That was it, basically.
I'm blaming you.
Woof
off. They have benching Vicario, Munoz and Dalot, mate. Didn't you know they were going to be worth 31 points?
I've seen bigger benches this week. We'll come on to one of them in a bit.
in the diff league or just in general?
In general, mate.
Okay. But that's a monster. That Munoz and Dalot, 25 points. Mad.
Win of the differential league. We kind of knew it would be because of pretty unassailable lead, but only increased it in the final week as well. Congratulations to Cole JB, has won the differential mini league by a whopping 43 points, got 56 on the final day with returns from Trent, Maddison, Eze, captain Brennan Johnson, Ivan Tony, 4-pointer as well. So Cole in first, James Morrison second, Alistair Cooper third. Good season there, guys. Minus 56. 88 points for me on final day, which sounds like a whopper. Meant I finished 23rd in the minus 56 league. But it's a whopper by accident, Suge. Because I don't know why the captaincy's on Mateta, but it is.
Take it.
So 40 points of that is from Mateta. I mean, this has happened to me a few times in a minus 56 this year. I feel like someone's playing tricks with me and someone's got access to the account and just starts fucking shit about. I had intended to captain Son, who returned, as did Havertz and Salah, and also Michael Olise. I had Trent at the back, and also Tomiyasu, who scored as well. So 88 points for me. Wasn't far off the highest score of the week, which was Joe Murphy, 96 points.
Tidy.
Trent, Virgil van Dijk, Salah, Maddison, Havertz, Olise, Mateta, captained Eze. 96 points meant that Joe finished one place above me in the minus 56 mini league. Lowest minus 56 score of game week 38 was for Alex Turner, minus 56, Barmy Army. Returns for captain Havertz, Olise, and substitute Rasmus Højlund. That was the lot. The winner of the minus 56 league was Sam Brennan, got 58 points on the final day. Ali Cooper got 55 points, so finished not too far behind, 22 points behind. Paul Meehan was third. Sam's overall score net was 511.
How did Clayton get on? He was doing quite well in that for a little while, wasn't
I think he finished fifth in the end. And I should have said, by the way, Cole's differential winning team was ranked at 1.644 million. So very similar rank to the winning zombie team. Cole's team was the only differential team to finish inside the top 2 million. You don't need me to tell you what Sam's overall rank was. It was about 10.7 million or something. Correspondent League. Because if you've been on Twitter, you've already been told 500 fucking times. I didn't realise my Everton correspondent had renamed himself as Andy Martin. But somehow, from nowhere, Sean Norton, our Everton correspondent, has won this.
Yeah.
He's
this
the
is
first
the most my
Evertonian.
Most coveted mini league is this one.
He is the first Evertonian to win anything in 30.
Ouch.
How many years? 29 years. Well done, Sean. 89 points on final day to overtake Mark Southerns, who got 58. Sean beat him by 3 points. So he scored 29 points more than him on final day and beat him by 3, which just shows you what you can still do on final day. Plenty of questions at the weekend. I need to catch someone by 25 points. He was massively helped by the fact that Mark left over 40 points on his bench this week.
Oh, dear.
I think Mark had on the bench, it was something like Isak, Porro, Muniz, Onana. Something like that. Fucking insane, mate.
It was Onana, Porro, Romero, Isak.
Okay.
So you're talking 20, 34, 41 points bench.
Yeah. Clates finished third.
Yeah, well done, Clates.
73 points for Clates on final day, so good final day. Dan, I think Clates was 22K overall. Sean was 11K, I think, 11 or 12K. And he was, by the way, about 82K after game week 34, I think. So a monster fucking finish. He pissed manager of the month. I've never seen a correspondent manager of the month been won by such a big difference. He just absolutely smashed it at the end. Good luck to him. And no, Sean, there's no fucking trophy. There's no big fucking shout out on the main pod. Did you hear him? Well, I listened to 1 hour, 24 minutes, 26 seconds. I didn't get one fucking shout out. No, blood. No, 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 no. I'll be in touch. I got something for you. Johnny Pringle come fifth, and he always does fucking very well, Johnny, doesn't he?
He does.
Right. Advanced tier mini league manager of the month for May is Chris Church. It's finished 1 point ahead of Duncan Rob Jones. Well done, Chris. Got 50 squid coming your way, mate. The intermediate tier mini league manager of the month for May is shared between Oliver and G and Hussein S. I will split that prize, obviously, but there's more money coming for the two of you anyway. Advanced tier mini league, third place overall, Albert Goodmanson, 2,613 points. I've got for Albert, 50 quid coming your way, mate. Second place, 2,622 points, Gary Warwood. So you've got 200 quid coming your way, mate, because you've got 100 quid for that, and you've got 100 quid for winning the advanced tier head-to-head mini league as well. We knew who the winner was. Jack Bones finished, I think, 30th overall.
Yep.
Finished on 2,698 points. Jack, big congratulations to you.
Me and Suja
got 350 quid for you. And
have we? Fuck yeah, no.
That's the prize, mate. Yeah, sorry. Suja, I don't think you realise how much money's coming out of the account in the next...
Mate, I've got to pay the VAT bill as well. Do you know that? I've got Lisa in the council. Have you paid the VAT bill? I'm like, no, I haven't. I need to do that today as well. Let me pay the VAT man first before we give all the rest of them this money.
All right. Can you let me know when you've paid it? I can. Yeah, you know, I don't want to spend all of next week paying people.
It's all good. Get it done. No problem.
Jack, you're more than welcome on the pod as well. You want to come and talk about this brilliant, amazing fantasy season you've had? You let me know. We can do it publicly. We can do it on Patreon. Or if you don't want to do it, it's no problem. But the offer is very much there, my friend. Well done. Right. Intermediate tier. Manager of the season. Third place goes to Sam Edwards on 2,628 points. I've got 25 quid for you, Sam. And I said I'd have some more for Oliver and Hussein, because not only were they first and second in May, they were also first and second overall. Hussein finished second, 2,634 points. I got 50 quid for you, sir. And for Oliver and G, who got 4 points more, 2,638, I got 175 quid for you, buddy. They both got 85 points, by the way. On final day, finished 4 points apart. The basic tier mini league winner, 2,628 points. Andrew Potter, 50 quid coming your way, mate. Very well done. Right, who else have I got prizes for? Joe Finley Badder, well done, mate. You were the Sky Fantasy Football Planet FPL Patrons mini league winner. I think Joe finished sixth overall, I think. 3,701 points. Joe, I got 75 quid for you. Adam English finished second. I got 25 quid for you. Shout out as well for Tom Johnson and Perry Hart, who sweeped up the cash mini leagues that I put together. So that's nice. So all that money's going to fucking patrons as well. That's fucking great. Who else have I got shout outs for? I will tell you. I have a shout out for Vishal Doshi. 100 quid coming your way for beating Sam Edwards in the Patron Champions League final on Sunday. I think that's all the prizes. I think done, Suj. Think. I don't
no
think
other
I missed anyone.
Cups, nothing.
No, I don't think so. Just probably a shout out to a few people. So big thanks to Rob Chetty, especially for obviously.
Panda.
He's
going to be playing some of the game in goal on Sunday, isn't he? Possibly, probably.
Depends which one of him and Sham gives me more money, to be honest. Because it looks like it might be up to me. Or it might not. I don't know yet. Rob's obviously done great work behind the scenes on the Patreon Champions League format. Also, the updating of the differential league in terms of availability of players. And big shout out to him and obviously Neil Thompson for the running of the goals comps competition. So the goals comp winner was Dermot McArdle. Well done. The predictions comp winner, which Joe Finley Badder as well. Irons, you know the boy. Luke
Irons.
Yeah, he's fucking smashed the Gaffer League again, didn't he?
No doubt.
I think he's finished like top 10 in Gaffer like the last three seasons or something.
Oh, wow.
It's fucking insane. I don't know if he's beat Jack Bones in anything else, though. You might have noticed, guys, that the Fantasy Football Scotland game is being pulled. I not played it last year because I really wasn't happy when they made so many changes to that app. The Gaffer guys have said they're going to look into the game again. Jack Bones finished second overall, so I presume if we had a mini league, I presume we fucking won that as well. I think that's it for prizes and stuff. I will be in touch, guys, to get you guys paid and whatnot once to just pay the fucking tax man, basically.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's just fine. There's money in the bank, James. We're all good. We've put that money aside. But well done, whoever you are and however you did, because, yeah, good achievement.
Let's talk England.
Yes. Firstly, it's a provisional squad, right? Is it 31 people in this squad?
33 names. Obviously, yeah. That's going to go down to 26. So I think I watched his press conference live yesterday. And it became really clear watching that he's not comfortable with the situation defensively at all. He's really not. And that's why he's picked so many bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So I think quite a bit of that is going to get cut defensively. I would imagine that at least one of Curtis Jones or Adam Wharton won't make it. Curtis Jones, when me and Clates did the podcast a couple of months ago, we said like the squad we'd go with. We never brought up Curtis Jones, even though I'd said several times that I wanted him in an England squad because the injury he got at Brentford, we thought was going to kind of put him out of the running. And it is a little strange that Harvey Elliott's played a lot more than him in the running. And yet Jones has got the call and Harvey Elliott hasn't. But I also realised that Jones, I think, is probably a little bit more suitable to play a deeper role or in a double pivot if necessary. Whereas Elliott, we've not seen in a midfield two. Ever.
He's almost a winger, isn't he, Elliot? Really?
I think
he's in a
I think
forward
that's why.
Role. Whereas, yeah, I would agree. I'd rather see Curtis Jones is a bit more all round, whereas Elliot's much more attacking.
One of them, at least one of them, is going to miss out. It might be two. One of the goalkeepers is obviously going to miss out. You would presume that's going to be Trafford or Henderson. I've said before, yeah. I don't mind it being Trafford. People are like, oh, yeah, the shit. Listen, the chances you're going
to
need the third
to play
choice
zero.
Goalkeeper.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
not zero, but you know,
take the one that might be your goalkeeper for the next tournament. Who knows? I think if you said, now, right, Trafford or Henderson's going to be in goal for England in 2 years. I'd feel like Trafford's more likely, personally. Up front, one of Tony or Watkins will get cut, I would guess.
Likely Tony.
Which I know Neil wasn't happy that Dominic Solanke hasn't been called up, but Tony played well in the last international for England. Watkins has had an absolute stormer of a season. There was no chance of Solanke getting a call up here. Plus, he's carrying a bit of an injury problem himself as well. Absolutely no chance. And one of these isn't going to go, I think. Because of the problems he's got and concerns defensively, he is not taking Watkins and Tony, I don't think. One of them's going to miss out.
And nor does he need to.
I also think James Maddison will be an attacking player who will miss out. I just don't see where it gets in there. I think it's more he's there. And if there's a problem, suddenly, you know, something happens to Bellingham or Foden, then, okay, it's not like, oh, sorry, James, can you come after all? I feel like it's like that. That's the one spare one. He needs an injury, I think, to get in the squad. It might be similar for Jarrod Bowen as well, which would be, it was so good for England in the March internationals.
But do you think Eze is going to drop it? Eze is going to get dropped as well? You can't.
Maybe.
I don't see
Eze over Maddison, clear as day for me, mate.
Sure, but I don't see Eze over Bowen.
Different though, aren't they?
They're different positions, but in terms of international experience, consistency over the season, Eze's been in and out with injuries and what have you. I just don't see, based on the season, how you would pick Eze over Bowen. Different players.
I don't. They're not in competition with each other, I don't think.
No, but the Bowen, numbers are the numbers. You're only allowed a certain number of players.
Bowen needs either something to happen to Palmer or Foden or Bellingham, in the sense that Gareth goes, right, well, I want to use Palmer in a more central role. Or there were two big things that came out of yesterday as well. One is obviously the two players dropped, which was a surprise. Right? While I was recording Nico's Corner yesterday morning, he said, oh, Jordan Henderson's out of the squad. And I was like, well, I'll believe it when I see it. Sure enough, he was. And so too Marcus Rashford. And people say that Southgate don't make these brave calls. But I think he has, actually.
And I think Kane and Watkins go and both get injured. From the rest of the attacking players, Gordon possibly, but otherwise Bowen's your next best striker.
Anthony Gordon is definitely going in this squad, mate. There's
no
way he won't
be
it.
Who would you play as a striker? He's played as a striker for bits and pieces. So Bowen's played quite a lot of the season as a striker. Like your back, if Rashford, yeah. Rashford would have been your alternative. I think as a third striker, Bowen should stay in.
But I think you could Foden, Palmer, Bellingham can all play that role. And by the way, so can Anthony Gordon.
Here's the thing. If you put any of them up there, you're taking something else away from somewhere else in the pitch. Where with those guys, I don't want Foden, Saka, and Bellingham to be playing as a striker. I want them as a three behind the striker, because that's where they're at their best and they're our best players. Like, the main thing you should do is play your best players in their best position. Don't like fucking shoehorn this and that and try and fudge it to make it work. Play your best players in their best positions and then everything else around it, figure it out. How many need to get cut then? Five, right? You said 25.
Seven.
So goalkeeper's one.
Forward
Ivan
is another.
Tony,
James
Maddison's
another. At least one of them midfielders.
Where's Wharton or Jones?
It's going to be a few of them defenders. I mean, at the moment, Serge, he's got 11 defenders.
Quansah or Quansah?
I think Jarrell Quansah is probably
That'd
pretty unlikely
great
to go.
Centre-back pairing. Quansah. What are the consequences of them making a mistake?
Oh, you can see it now, can't you?
Yeah.
Oh, the consequences of this were really bad. Yeah, there's a good podcast title now. Right, so the lack of left-back is alarming. So the situation with Luke Shaw is he's really struggling, seems to be the case. It doesn't sound like he's going to be ready for the FA Cup final at the weekend. There is concern that he might not make this tournament. I think if England get an indication that he can make the knockout stages, they'll take him, because there isn't an alternative. Ben Chilwell's not been included. Ben had a piece that went out on socials last week that spoke about mental health and stuff. And I think there's been issues for him in the past, potentially about being away from family and stuff. I'm not sure. He's also had injury issues as well. He's not been called up. Neither's another player that could cover at left back who's also had injury issues, Levi Colwill. So when you look at what you've got left here, you're asking yourself, who can play left back? Branthwaite, yes. But I'd suggest that's pretty uncomfortable. Lewis Dunk, no. Joe Gomez, yes.
I was going to say Gomez.
Mark Gay, Ezri Konsa, not sure. Harry Maguire, definitely not. Jarrell Quansah, definitely not. You wouldn't want to play John Stones there. You could play Kyle Walker there, but you don't want to. Kieran Trippier is the other one. Yeah, but Kieran Trippier has also had injury problems. And the Newcastle guys will tell you he's really struggled this season. And I think that's a bit concerning. I think we'll end up playing Joe Gomez left back at the tournament. I think that's what it's going to end up being. There is an alternative here, which gets Bowen in the squad, is Saka. I've spoken about this before.
Squad or team?
To play at left back.
No, so Saka plays left back. Then you said it gets Bowen in the squad. It gets Bowen in the team.
No, it doesn't get him ahead of Palmer, mate. Or you play like Foden on the right then, can't you? No, I don't think it gets Bowen Foden in the team.
I'd play Foden centrally. Sorry, not Foden centrally. I'd play Palmer central, Foden left, Saka right, Kane up top.
Palmer isn't starting unless I think there's an issue with Saka, and part of that issue might be something like this. I think Palmer's going to get eased into this. Remember, he's not played much for England.
How can you turn your left back and your right winger into left back?
Because what I can't get out of my head is this idea, right? For me, the best structure, Rice needs a partner, okay? Whether that's Trent, Colin Gallagher, whatever that's Kobe Mino, whatever that's going to be, I think it'll probably be Trent in the group stage. Whatever that's going to be, he needs something in there. This magic idea of 4-1-4-1s and restricting Declan Rice is not on. Because what we'd want to do really is get Declan Rice on someone like Trent on the ball and allow Declan Rice to join in as well, right? That's effective. So ideally in my head, Saka right, Bellingham as the 10, Foden left, right? But to get Foden from the left to the central area, Joe Gomez at left back, it's not fucking working for you to get like what I mean is like Vardy for City. You need someone to fly up that touchline and the right back, Cole Walker, perfect, to be defensive, right? And then you become like a back three in possession. That is what would allow Foden to get into 10 with Bellingham. But it's not going to be Joe Gomez like left wing for us. It's not. And so I wonder if it could be Saka, if that's the solution. I don't know what else in that squad as a makeup could do that to allow Foden to get from left to central that works. That's part of the problem. So I wonder if he might try it again. He did. Saka played left wing back in a game in Italy, in the Nations League, when England were having a really bad run. And it didn't particularly work. But you can trust Saka. I'm sure he doesn't want to do that. But it might be that's what he looks at here. I wonder. Okay. And that allows you to get an extra attacking player in a squad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But then you're also losing one of the best right wingers in the planet. But then it's also not like Palmer, Foden, Bowen can't all play on the right and be good enough. They are. So left back's the problem. I wonder if he might look at Saka as a solution if Shaw doesn't make it.
When's the final squad getting announced?
I don't think he doesn't have to be confirmed, I think, fully till like 7 days before the tournament. And I think even then, if you've got like an injury like before your first game, I think you can make a change.
Right, okay.
So I think England play on the Saturday before the tournament starts, but England's first game is not till the Sunday. So I think it might even be straight after the game on the Saturday or maybe even the day before.
Right.
Possibly. I think it will be about then that it will confirm. There's a few guys here that he wants to see, right? Like Quant, so he hasn't seen a lot of. Yeah, maybe he wants to look at trying Branthwaite at left back, you know. I don't know. That the defensive problems is going to be a headache. Yeah, it's all well and good looking at, oh, we got this amazing team. Rah, 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 rah. There's a problem here defensively that's possibly going to cost us, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Chelsea, were you shocked or not?
Very.
Yes and no. Yes and no. There's been enough noises recently that I think, and I spoke about this on the pod yesterday, enough noises that made you aware that something wasn't right. And then it was trending in the afternoon yesterday, poch out, and then boom, fell like packed cards. The news was going around that. But it does seem that mutual consent is the word here. It's not. He's not been sacked and he's not just resigned. It seems like an agreement.
He's not, you know, his statements afterwards have been pretty positive in terms of wishing the club the best. They're in better position, blah, 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 which you wouldn't expect anything less anyway, maybe. Question for me always is, well, what are you doing instead? If you're going to get rid of him, sure, what are you doing instead? Because better, sorry, new doesn't always mean better. And this is my concern for Chelsea. I think, unless they've got someone already lined up who is going to be incredible, there's a
Firstly,
lot of good managers in the market.
let me say I've got no fucking concern for Chelsea, as in from a selfish Tottenham viewpoint. Like, I don't care. Keep with this madness. I think there's a few things that's happened here. One, he only signed a 2-year contract. And I think there was a feeling that they didn't want uncertainty going into this season. So it was either going to be sign a new contract or part of the ways, basically. I think Todd Boehly's getting a lot of blame, but it sounds like this isn't anything to do with him.
I don't know if
Sounds
he'd be making decisions like this as a
it's the
dictator
people,
all on his own.
above him. Supposedly, Boehly and Pochettino went for dinner on Thursday or Friday, and that was really amicable. And supposedly Todd Boehly's been in quite support of him. Is it Bergali and someone else, the guys at Clear Lake above him, have obviously called this meeting on Monday. And that's where this amicable parting of the ways has come about. It is said or rumored a little bit like the legend of Boehly saying, let's play. What was it you wanted to play? 4-4-3, wasn't it? He wanted to play as a system. But supposedly they took in data to Pochettino to show like where the failings were this year. And one of the failings aimed against him was the amount of big chances they'd missed. Now, if that
He's
is
not on the
true,
pitch, is he?
I'd have been him, I'd have just, I'm out of here. Because that is absolutely fucking bonkers. So you got a team. This is the thing with Chelsea. The underlying data this year puts them at fourth, by the way. All right. And they finished below that. Right. It's not his fault that Jackson and others have spurned so many chances across the whole season, right? If that's really been said to him, I can definitely imagine he's gone, what the fuck is this? That can't be true, can it?
We always talk in FPL about the process, right? Trust your decision-making process, and the result will be what it will be. It's the same. Like if you came to me and said that, I'd be like, that's good. That's a good thing, right? How long can you go on with that much variance from XG or big chances or whatever it is versus the reality? It doesn't go on forever. Eventually, it does come right. And it's not like they haven't got other players still to come into that team that can write that. Like an Nkunku, for example. You think he's not going to improve their big chance conversion? Of course he is when he gets
So,
fit. So it's a good thing to be able to turn around and say, well, we've
but
made
exactly that as
progress
well.
there.
The guy they spent the big money on wasn't Jackson, was Bucky
Yeah.
Nkunku. He hasn't had him all season.
Yeah. His big chance conversion undoubtedly would be better.
Look, I tweeted this yesterday as well, and I was generally kind of the opinion that it probably wouldn't work for Pochettino at Chelsea. And I think part of that was going to be there was always going to be this Tottenham bit in the background where some fans were just like never going to take to him. And you see that online yesterday. If you look at the reaction of the patrons, everyone's like, what the fuck? If you look online, you'll see a lot of happy Chelsea fans. Now, I realize that online is not necessarily representative of the Chelsea fan base. It's the Twitter culture, don't get me wrong. But there's some that will just never, ever going to sign up to this. I used a stat yesterday, Suj, about in 2024, they'd won 10, drawn 5, lost 3. Well, actually, the last two games of the previous year, they won as well. So it's won 12, drawn 5, lost 3 of their last 20. So it's 41 points from their last 20 games, more than 2 points per
2 points a
game.
game.
Like, so, and they've obviously finished the season like a train, right? Won the last five games, deserved to win all of them, as far as I can tell. They should have won at Villa. They've actually ended up finishing, I think, only 4 points off fourth. Four or five points.
They were 3 points behind you, so
So five points off fourth, I think. Yeah. Imagine that late goal there disallowed at Villa.
Mm.
And I realised at that stage that was already gone because, you know, the gap was too big. But actually, I haven't ended up finishing that far off it. So even if you did have all this analytic data that you were focused on and then, oh, it's not been great, do you not just take a step back and go, well, it's definitely been a lot fucking better over the last like 6 weeks or so, no? To want to go in there and almost antagonise him.
Yeah.
I think he knew as well. I think he's known for a while, Pochettino. That's what I'd said yesterday. I wonder if something had been agreed a while ago or he'd had enough inkling that, yeah, this is probably what it was going to be. And he's a good man, Pochettino.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody that particularly dislikes him per se. So.
Yeah, he's a good man. And I think he's probably known that he might have been going at the end of the season. Who knows? Maybe that's the bit that's given Chelsea the freedom. What people just generally can't understand is like, this guy, why did you appoint this guy? Right, because this guy has shown at Tottenham that he can work with brilliant young players, struggled more with the egos at Paris Saint-Germain, right? But can work with good young players and improve them, right? The football club wants to buy a fucking younger and younger player every fucking week. I saw someone joke that they might appoint a 17-year-old as manager, right? And it probably wouldn't come as like a huge shock. So you've got the right man in there to have the longer term vision. Okay, fine. So one of the things with, like, I reflect on conversation we had with Gary about Potter, right? So it's like Potter was brought in as a project manager. Doesn't mean you have to stay with that long term. And it comes to a point where you go, okay, this is possibly the wrong guy. All right, fine. So then you've appointed another guy who quite clearly wasn't going to walk in the door and just like, win the fucking league this year or anything like that, longer term project manager again, and you've changed again. So it's really conflicting. So now what I've come to the conclusion is these people at the top of Chelsea, they're at fucking, like, they're at odds with each other.
Yeah.
I think Bolly's got a longer term vision. I think he generally has. I think a lot of the others just want a return on their investment. So they're in trouble. And you look at the names being mentioned now today, and it's like it's going to be another project manager is what it looks like. So names getting mentioned today are things like Kieran McKenna, Thomas
what?
Frank, yeah, genuinely,
okay.
Thomas Frank at Brentford, Stuttgart manager whose name escapes me, and there's another young English manager, I can't remember who or something. But those are the sort of names being mentioned. Right, now, same thing, okay? If you appoint any of these guys, none of them are fucking winning Chelsea the Premier League next year. Pochettino wasn't winning Chelsea the league next year. No one. Pep Guardiola is not winning the league for Chelsea next year because that squad is still too young and too inexperienced. It's going to make mistakes. It will have good runs, win 4, 5, 6 games, and you'd be like, fucking hell, they've drawn against Burnley or they've drawn against Sheffield United. So, like, I don't know what the expectation is here now for them. It just looks a mess. And it doesn't mean if you've got owner and manager aren't working in the same direction, you are better off cutting it. That I will acknowledge and say. It's the same with if De Zerbi and Brighton have started disagreeing about stuff, don't, oh, it's a happy marriage. No, cut it. So I do kind of get it, but the message to the Chelsea fans must be, they must be thinking, well, what are we fucking trying to do here?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Anything to add?
I think they're going to go and get a super. I thought they were going to get a superstar. You talked about project manager. I honestly thought they might have had like a Zidane up their sleeve or something like that.
Sounds like it won't be anything like that, mate. It'll be up and coming again.
Then I think it's stupid. And I think it's stupid.
Yeah, there's a lot here that's not understandable. I just think in terms of how they're thinking as a football club doesn't make sense. And I also think as well, the Chelsea fans are probably the happiest they've been all season. Must be.
Let me ask you a question.
And it's just like you put a pin in the fucking balloon.
How much of Cole Palmer's amazing season do you credit to Pochettino's coaching? Do you think he's had a big influence on that?
I would suggest yes.
Okay, so you've got a manager there that's coached best player in the league this year.
So
from I would say from nowhere, but pretty much from
well,
nowhere.
To go back to the example of what he'd done at Tottenham, Not the same players, but I think the scenario is comparable. And I realised Cole Palmer came out of Manchester City, but no one even expected him to play that much for Chelsea at the start. Let's be real. A lot of us last August were going 40 million for this fucking kid who's barely played. Now you'd be putting the number, if you sold him, would begin with a one, right? That's how well he's done. But Tottenham bought a kid from MK Dons for 5 million, who then won the Young Player of the Year, exactly the same, scored a shit ton of goals. And guess what? Finished the season starting for England at a major tournament on year one, which was obviously Dele Alli. And so look at Dele Alli now. That's not to say that that's going to happen to Cole Palmer, but how much of a role did Pochettino have on Dele Alli? Yeah,
I was going to say, massively. Like, I don't know if you can say that Dele's demise was because Poch was no longer his manager.
Well, I don't think it helped because they had a great relationship, and Dele's obviously had
Where I'm going with this is, so you've got the best player in the league this year so far. The manager that's got that out of him,
he's got it a lot out of himself. I'm not saying Palmer's got
I'm not
talent
saying
here, 100%, just for clarity.
But definitely it's not zero influence, and you're going to let him go. It doesn't make sense to me. I genuinely thought that they've done it because they've got a superstar in the waiting, in the wings waiting. But all right.
It's
David
not
going to
be, mate.
It's going to be David
it's
Moyes.
It's not going to be. You want a prediction?
Yes.
Pochettino will be in charge of Manchester United within 2 weeks.
I think it's going to take some doing, but wouldn't surprise me. All right, Chelsea fans, jump in the comments on the Patreon app and let us know what you're thinking in terms of that. Obviously, just go to the Slack channel, which is Chelsea, because I'm sure there's plenty of conversation going on in there about what the fuck is going on. Cool. Other than that, stay safe. Look after yourselves, patrons. And,
this is like a fucking epilogue, right?
Ciao for now.
Thanks, patrons. Tottenham and Arsenal tomorrow. Cue music, please, man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.